Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Hello and welcome to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Simca Fisher on this fine Monday afternoon. We're zeroing in on Easter. Yesterday was Lazarus Sunday, although we didn't do the reading about Lazarus. We did the reading about the woman taken in adultery, which yes. Kind of surprised me, but also a good reading. And yes, so we're zeroing in on Easter. Easter is, good golly, next Sunday is Palm Sunday.
Yeah, I spent most of yesterday trying to persuade my son that there are 2 weeks left of Lent and not 1 week left of Lent. He couldn't get it through his head. I think the problem was that the Missalette only had 5 weeks of Lent in it, and we're like, but there's a see in the back of the church, see all those boxes? Those are full of Missalettes with the rest, and yeah. He just couldn't deal with it. He was so sure that it was
too much.
Yeah, I don't know what he's giving up. It must be something really hard because it's wearing on him. So, and the other kids are like, come on, Mo, get it together. And I'm like, you know, if Lent is that easy for you, maybe you're not doing something that's hard enough. Right away, they immediately shut up, which is, you know, my main goal as a parent, just trying to get my kids to shut up. And I did it. So
well
I'm
done.
Going to Lent. Yeah, my Lent is right on track.
I'm proud of you. You know, your kids be quiet. You know, well, you know, you've got a lot of them to wrestle. So there's a lot of ambient noise when you're doing these things.
Yes.
But this past weekend I was in Moses Lake, Washington. There is a place called Moses Lake, Washington.
Why is it called that? Did you find out?
You know, I don't know, really. Presumably, it's not because somebody parted it and walked through it.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe it has some kind of, like, tides or something, you know?
No, I don't think so. I don't really know where we get a lot of our place names out in eastern Washington. There's always a mixture of biblical names. Like, there's the town near Moses Lake is called Ephrata, as in Bethlehem Ephrata. Mm-hmm. So you get biblical names, you get kind of English-sounding names. So I'm from Everett, which is a pretty sort of Bostonian kind of name. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of it is Indian names.
Right, yeah.
That's pretty
much what we have. We have the same. We used to have this game where we would try and make up towns from Massachusetts, though. The towns from Massachusetts have the worst names in the world. And a lot of them, you don't even pronounce half the letters in them. Like, well, there's Worcester, Massachusetts. We're close to the Massachusetts border. My husband works in Massachusetts, so we spend a lot of time there. And, you know, you have Worcester, which is spelled Worcester, of course. Uh-huh. And you have... there's a couple others like that where you can immediately tell if somebody's from there or not, because if they're not from there, they'll pronounce it the way it's actually spelled.
Worcester.
Yeah. but there's other ones like that. And then there's just the complete hideous, you know, there's Braintree and Athol. Like, I always felt sorry for the people who come from Athol, you know. It seems like you sort of have people sort of predisposed against you if you have to introduce yourself. Well, this is where I'm from.
Well, oh, man. Yes, yeah, that's a name that just invites mispronunciation, doesn't it?
Especially the way they drive. If you've ever been there, my stars. I found that we live fairly close to a place called Troy, and I thought, well, good for them. You know, it's a tiny little town. I thought, you know, somebody studied their classics. That's awesome. Somebody, you know, somebody's up on their you know, ancient Greek. It turns out it's named after Troy, New York. It's not named after ancient Troy. It's named after Troy, New York.
Troy, New York.
It's like, people, try harder.
I don't even... Actually, I think I do. I think Everett, the town where I'm from, Everett was named for the son of whatever city father was wanting to name the town. So he named him after his kid, Everett. And I think it was because his kid like came into the meeting while they were trying to decide it. And he was like this greedy little kid who was demanding more stuff from dad. And this 19th century, you know, capitalist looked at this kid and said, you know, this expresses my highest aspirations as a human being is to want more stuff. And so they named the kid, they named the town after the kid. This kind of weird mishmash of, you know, this kind of collision of white cultures. So, and out here, I don't know, I guess if you live in a state with a name like Massachusetts, I guess the Indians there went also for long, complicated words and names. That's the way it is out here. So all the names out here are typically 3 or 4 syllable long names. So Skycomish and Snohomish and Stillaguamish and, you know, now and then we'll get a short name like Skagit. but mostly, yeah, they seem to, the natives out here seem to go for really long, complicated names. Well, there's also Twisp, which I like.
Twisp.
And it's not.
Wow. It sounds like a place where you would want to go for vacation. I'm going to head off to Twisp for a weekend.
Actually, it is a place where people go for vacations. Huh. It's not a breakfast food. It sounds like it could be a cereal. For those of us who are old enough to remember Quisp and Quake. But both of them breakfast cereals. But Quisp had some kind of outer space mascot guy or something. But anyway, Twisp actually is the local name for wasp. Because
like an actual insect wasp, meaning?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Not a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. And
they have enough towns named after them, I guess.
Well, it got the name. Yes, exactly. It got the name because the salmon would swim up the Twisp River. The Twisp River empties into the Columbia. And so salmon are amazing creatures. They're born in some, you know, little unknown stream somewhere out in the Tulies. And that stream then feeds into the larger river. They swim into the larger river. They swim downriver out into the Pacific. And then they begin this epic journey up the Canadian coast all the way to Alaska. And they swim all the way to Alaska and then think, I really would like to go back to the exact same place where I was born. Yeah, and so they swim back down the Canadian. This all takes 4 years. They swim back down the Canadian coast. They find the river mouth where they swam out into the Pacific. They swim up that river. And then they swim to the exact creek where they were born and swim up that creek and spawn and die. And when they die, you know, there's like millions and millions of them all flooding the creek. And they don't eat anything once they hit fresh water. They turn bright red. The males grow this kind of big, formidable looking hook nose. And then they spawn and they die. And then their dead bodies fill these creeks and they provide nutrients for the next generation of baby salmon when they're born.
This is what people mean when they say that nature is so beautiful.
Nature is beautiful. And but the thing is that when they die by the millions in these creeks, it attracts wasps. And so the local Indians called the river where they lived the Twisp River because of all the wasps.
It sounds better than dead bloating fish corpse river.
Yeah, it does, really. And it's shorter, you know.
Even in the Indian tongue, I imagine.
Yeah. So there you are. Yes. So that's the, you know, that's the natural cycle. And salmon are also important because somebody had the bright idea of putting them into the Great Lakes. Because when they connected the Great Lakes, lamprey eels got into the Great Lakes And lamprey just sort of fasten onto the side of fish and then just sort of suck them dry. And so they got in and they were killing the local fish population. Well, it turns out coho salmon think lamprey are a tasty treat.
Oh, good. So they put them in there. You try and tell yourself that animals are amoral creatures and that they don't really have any, spiritual... they're just creatures. They're just dumb creatures, and they don't. But seriously, some of those like lampreys, that's a bad thing to do. That's just objectively a mean, bad thing to do.
It's mean, and
it's very mean.
They're stuck doing it because the way they're built,
Yeah.
So, there are all kinds of creatures that we've done this for centuries with like wolves. Wolves they're bad. And it turns out wolves aren't really all that bad, but we're afraid of wolves. Snakes are the same way. Snakes have.
I have a theory about wolves, though. Well, I have two. I have a lot of theories about wolves. Number one, my first theory is that there is no such thing as wolves, because I've been to no fewer than 3 different zoos that have wolf displays.
They looked like dogs to me.
No, there weren't any. There weren't any at all. There was just nothing. It was a bunch of trees there. I was like, I did not drive 170 miles. We have trees at home. It doesn't have.
Where's my thing. Wolf
outside? And they're like, oh, they're hiding. They're resting. They're in their den. They're like, okay. So that's my first theory. My second theory is that wolves actually are here for some moral purpose. But around here, there's a backlash against the wolves are evil thing, right? So we have people who are constantly, I'll have to tell it after the break.
Oh, okay. We'll hear the story after the break. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We are here today with Simca Fisher, and we will be back on Connecting the Dots right after this.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Hello, and welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Simca Fisher. If you want to join our conversation, our dazzling repartee, feel free to do so by giving us a call at 1-573-4-BREAD-4, 1-573-4-BREAD-4. You can also... you could text us at that number, 1-573-4-BREAD-4. You can also tweet us at Breadbox Media. And our ardent and passionate producer, Ethan Bolin, ardent and passionate, I say,
sure,
will instantly put you on the air. And then we will talk the hind leg off a donkey, and you can try and get a word in. How about that? So... Isn't that a great expression? Talk the hind leg off a donkey. I don't even know what that means.
What would the donkey be doing that whole time? Just like standing there, or
being a patient person, I guess, or if donkeys are persons, which they're not. But anyway, you were going to tell a wolf story.
I was going to tell a wolf story. Speaking of, that doesn't have anything to do with donkeys. Never mind. So around here, we were talking about how, people used to say, oh, wolves are bad, wolves are evil and everything. And then there was sort of a backlash against that. And they're like, no, wolves are just misunderstood. They're beautiful, mystical creatures. They're so intelligent. They're so, compassionate. And they can speak different languages and all these things. So there's a lot.
Really? Okay.
Yeah,
Wolves were that awesome.
that there, you know, pretty much any good thing that there is in the world, you can say it about a wolf at this point. This is what I've learned from, you know, if you hang around at like flea markets and stuff where they're selling like dream catchers and incense burners and things like this to catch my drift. So every once in a while you hear about somebody who's decided that they're going to have a wolf rescue place, because there's a lot of wolf dog hybrids around here. People have decided that wolves are so great that it would be a great idea to have a wolf dog hybrid for a pet. Okay. And what they don't realize is that two things they don't realize. Number one, when you have a wolf dog hybrid, that's really still basically a wolf. I mean, it's really like the wolf part is really kind of dominant. And the other thing is, sometimes they think it's a wolf dog hybrid and it's not. It's just a wolf. Sometimes they look at it and they don't realize, like, they've never really seen a wolf before. So there are people out there who have wolves for pets, and you see them every once in a while and you can't persuade them that what they have on their leash is not a wolf. And also you can't persuade them that this is not actually a pet. This is a wolf who is humoring you, but for who knows how long. So what happens every once in a while is they decide they're going to have a wolf hybrid rescue area. And these are always people who are like really, really well-meaning, and they have some land and they put together some kind of fence made out of like doors and chicken wire and stuff. And they have all the wolves and the wolf hybrids there. And these are not dogs. They're wild animals. They're really, really wild animals. And there's really no other way of describing what they are. And they act like wild animals. And every once in a while, you know, guess what happens? They get out because they didn't put together a very good fence. So the last time they had, I think it was like Dancing something or other wolf hybrid rescue, some of the wolves got out, and the concerned townspeople went to them. Yes.
I was just going to say, it's, you know, Dances with Wolves hybrids. Wolf hybrids just doesn't have the same kind of ring to it. You know,
yeah. But, these are the people who named their town after Troy, New York. So,
So now, what is the name of the town that's named after Troy, New York? That's what I want to know.
It's New York.
Oh, okay. So anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, so the concerned people went to the owners of this wolf hybrid rescue area and told them that some of their pets had gotten out. So they decided to solve it by leaving the gate open so that they could come back in when they were ready. So so the rest of them got out, of course. And they were completely surprised that this would happen.
I'm stunned.
It's one of those. I mean, my husband covered this, so he's a reporter, and he covered this story a number of years ago. And it's one of these stories that you write it one time, and you think, I'll be back. There's going to be a follow-up to this story sooner or later, because these people, you know, if at one point in your life it seems like a good idea to you to leave the gate open so the wolf can come back, then there's going to be a follow-up story of one kind or another.
That's magnificent.
It is. It's just, and I know, you know, in theory, it's a serious thing but the wolves seem to have the attitude that, you know, they do not want to spend any more time than necessary around these lunkheads, and they're not going to like hang around ravening and killing people. They're just going to leave because they can't deal with it. So they just leave. So yeah. It's not really a danger exactly. It's just I don't know. It's that kind of state. This is where we live.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Did you have a wolf joke, Mark? I heard something about a joke.
You know, I was going to tell a joke, but now I've forgotten what it is.
Oh, I was looking forward to it. I was thinking
it'd be a great joke.
I was thinking this story doesn't have to be too good because Mark has a joke to follow up and kind of.
I can't remember the joke. My mind just went blank on it. I have a terrible memory, and it seems to be getting worse. So
I think I've heard that happens.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, You put out your weekly APB.
Yes.
And you just wanted people to throw in their topics on whatever, on the whatever of things.
Whatever of things, yes.
So, yeah, yeah. So we've got a few suggestions. I'm going to throw out the phone number one more time because I know some of these people are listening and they're itching to get on the air, but, you know, they're modest, and which... You know, no need to be. So give us a call at 1-573-4-BREAD-4, 1-573-4-BREAD-4, and join the hoop-de-doo and mayhem that's happening here. Also, you can tweet us at breadboxmedia.com. So I'm scrolling down here. Put up a little piece Tom Hoops wrote. Tom used to be an editor for the National Catholic Register, and he wrote a little piece for Alatea on that awkward moment when other faiths meet Christ, mm-hmm. Which I think is something that's important for us to talk about. It's something a lot of Catholics get confused about. That if you in any way, you know, acknowledge the truths that are affirmed by other faiths, somehow or other, you're selling out the faith. You know,
or you're saying all religions are equal, or
all religions are equal,
or
all really saying the same thing, and all of that. All you know, the Catholic Church has always affirmed whatever it can affirm. In common with other belief systems. And by the way, belief systems doesn't include merely religious systems.
Right.
Political systems, social theories, ideologies, philosophies, these are all, in one way or another, these are all belief systems too. Because they contain certain premises that you're just taking them on faith, right. You know. So you take it on faith. As a libertarian, for example, that people are rational actors economically, and they're going to do what's in their own best interest all the time. That's a faith statement, you know, and it's a faith statement that's, you know, it's true a lot of times, but it's also true a lot
not
of times.
Not often enough, though.
People are going to do really dumb things with their money, or they're going to do radically self-sacrificial things with their money, things that by the world standards are crazy to do, but you know, if you subscribe, if you're Francis of Assisi, you're doing different things with your money than if you're JP Morgan or Bill Gates. You know, you've got a different set of priorities, and so the Catholic Church has always affirmed what can be affirmed in common. So you see Jesus trying to affirm what can be affirmed in common with Sadducees, with Pharisees, with Greco-Roman pagans. Mm-hmm. And you see Paul doing the same thing. So Paul goes to Athens. And he's talking to a bunch of Athenian pagans, so he starts where they are. He starts by quoting their own poets. He doesn't quote the Old Testament to them because they don't care about the Old Testament.
All right.
What they care about is their own poets, and so he cites their own poets to them. And you see Thomas Aquinas doing the same thing. He's quite happy to listen to what Aristotle has to say. And Aristotle is a Greek pagan. He's quite happy to listen to what Averroes and Avicenna have to say about Aristotle. These are two Muslim commentators. And the church says, that's fine. You know, that's great because all truth is God's truth. And so we don't have to worry that there's, you know, there's a Republican truth and a Democrat truth and a Buddhist truth and an Islamic truth. And then there's the Catholic truth over here in this corner. Anything that's true is something that we can affirm. And people have such a hard time hearing that, they get very threatened by it, and I'm always surprised by that when people get threatened by it. Oh, looks like we may have lost Simca there for a little bit. She'll be back. I'm quite confident. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Simca Fisher. We will be back in just a jiffy on Redbox Media. Thank you.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Hello, and welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Simca Fisher. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-573-4-BREAD-4, 1-573-4-BREAD-4. We were talking before the break about Tom Hoops's article on when the church engages people from other religious traditions, and this is this is something the church has always had to do, because it was born into a world where its own matrix out of which it was born was Jewish, but the vast majority of the world wasn't Jewish. The vast majority of the world was various flavors of paganism, and that was what the church sort of went out to engage. Then several centuries after the birth of the church comes the rise of Islam, and Islam is basically a kind of... it's a hybrid of Judaism and Christianity, stripped down to its simplest premises. Sure. And so you get this as well. And whenever Christians feel threatened, there's always a temptation, of course, for Christians to say, well, we don't have anything to do with those guys whatsoever. So in the second century, you get a guy like Marcion comes along, and Marcion feels threatened by Judaism. He doesn't like the Jews. So what does he do? Well, we don't have anything to do with the Jews. The Jewish God isn't even our God. We don't even read the Old Testament, says Marcion. We reject the Old Testament. He offers a New Testament that's basically a kind of stripped down. You get the Gospel of Luke stripped of all Old Testament references because we don't have anything to do with the Jews because we don't like them. And you get St. Paul. And you get his letters sort of also, edited, sanitized for your protection from all references to the Old Testament. And so he thinks he's giving us a refined, more perfect faith. But, the church says, no, actually, the God of the Jews is our God. We do read the Old Testament, and stop screwing around with the letters of Paul and the Gospels, And so Marcion becomes a heretic. But that simplifying impulse is always there. Mm-hmm. And the tendency to want to try to turn a blind eye to all similarities and only emphasize differences. And so you get the same thing today, of course. Ever since 9/11, you've had Christians who have been insisting that we have absolutely nothing in common with Islam. Well, but we do, right? And so what the church says is, affirm what can be affirmed in common. That doesn't mean we have to affirm everything in common, and it doesn't mean we're all saying the same thing, and it doesn't mean that all religions are salvific.
Right.
It just means pay attention to what can be affirmed in common.
Yeah.
So if,
And
if
to be fair, that is a difficult thing to do. That really is a difficult thing to do because, a lot of the time, there are some people who resist this kind of thing because, they're jerks and they're snobs and they're trying to be exclusive and stuff like that. But there are also people who are doing it because it means so extremely very much to them, and they're very afraid of slipping into heresy themselves. And that's one reason that they're, genuinely fearful about it, not in a nasty, exclusive kind of way, or a Pharisaical kind of way. And the other thing is, I come across this attitude a lot among new converts because they especially ones who have had to, you know, they become alienated from their family, or maybe they lost their job, you know, maybe they were a pastor in their old church and they converted to Catholicism and gave up everything. We know people like this, you know, so it's understandable that they would be, you know, a little bit more rigid and protective of the things which is not abundantly clear that these are just simply Catholic things, because they had to give up so much to get here, and they want to feel like, well, you know, as soon, you know, I made so many personal sacrifices, and I know it was the right thing to do, and this is no time to get sloppy about it, you know. So it's an error, but it's a completely understandable error, and I think that we should try to, I don't know, I feel like we should at least consider cutting people some slack and not assume that they have this attitude just because they're ultra rigid, or because they're trying to exclude people or condemn other people, or because they're, you know, because they're just tribalistic, you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
There's different legitimate reasons for having hesitance around this kind of thing.
Yeah, so. This is typically, these kinds of things are typically born out of fear. Where will it all lead?
Fear of actual true dangerous things, because for a lot of people who have lived through, you know, Vatican II, when a lot of priests and nuns were actually preaching that there, it doesn't especially matter which religion you belong to, whichever one makes you feel comfortable. And sometimes people hear, you know, there is some truth in Islam, or there is some truth in Buddhism, for instance, like Tom Hoops was saying that, I don't have the article in front of me, but he was pointing out that, you know, a lot of Muslims could put Catholics to shame I should pull up the article. You know, just their obedience to God. They're just abasing themselves before God. So, you know, there are aspects of different religions which we, because that was Hoops's point, not only that various other religions besides Catholicism have some grains of truth in them, but that just because we belong to the one true religion, which I do believe the Catholic faith holds the fullness of truth insofar as it's possible to hold it on this earth, because we belong to it doesn't mean we're necessarily going to be ready and willing to meet God when he comes back. We're not going to say, oh, well, I'm holding a Catholic ticket in my hand, therefore I'm going to run right through that gate. You know, it doesn't necessarily work that way. And we need to, it's not even necessarily a matter of examining the faith that you belong to, but examining how well you actually adhere to that faith. Because knowing the truth is one thing, and receiving it and living it is a completely other thing, as we know. You know, I just went to confession the other day, and let me tell you.
Sure. This is how John the Baptist, you know, starts his preaching. He's saying, you know, you think that because you're sons of Abraham, you're in like Flynn, you know?
Right.
God can raise up, stones to be sons of Abraham, you know? Right. How are you living? And that's, you know, that really is the question. That it's really very, very easy for us to kind of say, I belong to the right tribe, so, you know, I'm good.
Done.
Well, perhaps there's other things you're not taking into account. And this is, you know, this is the difficult part of our faith, is our faith is extremely demanding. George MacDonald, great 19th century fantasy writer, said that God is easy to please but hard to satisfy. And so, you know, on the one hand, you know, a friend of mine named Tom Kreitzberg once remarked that a religion that practices infant baptism does not have rigorous membership requirements.
That's true.
And that's true. On the other hand, that the reason that we are given such ease of access to the grace of God is because God, though easy to please, is hard to satisfy. And so, you know, Jesus also says things like that we have to be willing to lay down our lives, take up our cross, and follow him. Taking up your cross is hard. You know, that's not just a figure of speech. Jesus actually took up a real cross. And not, you know, not a pleasant experience, but this is what we're in fact called to. And so we have to spend our lives, you know, examining our motives and making sure that what we're doing out of a desire to please God and not out of the desire to say, I am awesome because, you know, I got my sacramental punch card punch this Sunday, so that makes me fine, you know. And yeah, so anyway, you've got some readers writing in though. Wanted to take a little bit of time and what are they saying to you today?
My computer is being ridiculous. Here's an excellent question. Last minute Lent, what to do when you've sucked at Lenting so far? Well, this harks back to what we were talking about in the beginning of the hour, actually, when my son was, you know, he was moaning because there were 2 weeks of Lent left instead of 1 week of Lent. And his sister was like, well, you know, what are you complaining about? And I was like, well, maybe you should be trying harder if it's that easy for you. So if in fact you're just zipping through Lent and finding it easy and no trouble at all, you probably haven't picked a difficult enough or a meaningful enough sacrifice. So that could be something. But also sometimes we really simply aren't trying hard enough. And one thing that I have found is useful is to give myself a really, really simple basic thing, like I have to make a morning offering before I'm allowed to check Facebook. Like, it should be super, super easy, but okay. Just absolutely promising and maybe even making a vow, if I really think I'm going to live up to it, that I will absolutely do this every single day without fail for the next week or something like that. And it is extremely humbling, even to the point of being humiliating, how difficult it can be to do something very easy but faithfully, rather than doing something more difficult but, you know, maybe I do, maybe I don't. So being faithful in small things, harder than it seems, and valuable.
All right, cool. Well, we will continue this when we get back. You're listening to Connecting the Dots here on Connecting the Dots, Breadbox Media's
premier radio show.
Round telephone radio show. We'll be back.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Wow. Welcome back to Connecting the Dots. Three, two, three, today is, as you may have gathered from that awesome musical contribution from Ethan Bolin, our producer, today is Pi Day. This is also my mother's, my late beloved mother's birthday. So 3.14159. So the show basically started at the Pi Minute at 1:59. So anyway, something 1:15 on my time at any rate. So somebody is also asking. We uncovered perhaps an unbridgeable rift during the break between me and Simca Fisher, who I used to like and respect, but no
It was bound to happen.
It turns out that Simca doesn't like chocolate pie. I'm sorry. Cars are driving off the road right now. I hope you're happy.
Wiping
the tears from their eyes in shock.
Chocolate is great, and pie is great.
But not chocolate pie.
You know, I don't see how they go together, because pie crust doesn't taste good with chocolate. It's my point. And I don't see how anyone can argue with that.
Graham cracker. Doesn't. You get graham cracker crust.
Blah. That's my argument. Just blah. We had my husband likes chocolate pie, or some of my kids like chocolate pie.
I knew there was a reason I liked that guy.
And my had my mother-in-law came over for Thanksgiving one year, and she brought three of her chocolate cream pie or chocolate custard, chocolate something pie, three of them with homemade crust and everything. She's a good cook. And we're looking, and you know, there's a lot of food in the refrigerator. So he says, "Well, it's not going to fit in the refrigerator, but it's plenty cool out. Just put them on the porch." And we said this forgetting that we are the proud owners of like a 175-pound dog who really, really likes chocolate pie in crust that we put on the porch.
You put it where I can reach it, so it must be mine.
It is exactly his voice. We talk in the boomer voice all the time. He's such an idiot. Such an idiot. I mean, he's so, I think we salvaged one pie, and we thought it was funny. My mother it was that funny. This was a couple of years ago.
Boomer just came in the game of life.
That's so great. He has no idea what's going on. The poor. We were fixing, you know, we're responsible homeowners. My husband was going around fixing all the smoke alarms, because you're supposed to do that on daylight savings, right? You just check all your batteries and your smoke alarms. So he's checking them, and the house is, huh?
That's a thing? I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, maybe it's an East Coast thing. I don't know. But on daylight savings, you're supposed to check all your smoke alarms. So they get you twice a year, so you're supposed to check them. So they're beeping all over the house. And he has one of those electric collars to keep him safe, because we lived on the highway. So he has to have an electric collar to keep him safe. So he hears it beeping, and he thinks it's his collar beeping. And he's just... He's been in his crate all day, the poor guy. He's such a big baby. He really is. He has got to be at least 175 pounds by now. He's a mastiff, and he's such a big baby. He thinks he's a lap dog. He's one of those ridiculous, enormous dogs that thinks that he can just curl up on your lap. Yeah.
Does he lay down on top of Corey and crush her, or
no? He's so careful with the baby. Aww. He's so careful with the baby. He was. We'd had him for about 2 years when she was born, okay. And we knew that he was gonna. I wasn't worried at all, because I had seen the way he behaves around little kids. He was just born that way. It's just his personality. I don't know if you could teach a dog to be like this, but he just instinctively knows that the little guys can do whatever they want, and you better not bother them.
Okay. Well, that's pretty sweet. Taking care of the pups.
No, it has its good side and its bad side, because sometimes Damien will be tickling her or something, and the dog will come up, and he doesn't threaten or anything, but he's like, excuse me, I just want you to know that I am watching you. And I'm watching you, and you need to know that. he's pretty sure that everything is okay, but he needs you to know that if it's not, yeah, it's really cute.
Yeah,
it's
see, that's cute. Where I start going, okay, I mean, I don't spend a lot of time worrying about whether oysters have a moral sense.
Yeah. But,
you know, when you get to the higher brain function critters, like dogs and things, you just start thinking... there's something more than instinct going on here.
There's definitely something. I know, and with chimpanzees and stuff, I really think about a woman who was, she was working with, I think it was chimpanzees, maybe gorillas. They're all pretty smart. And she was working with them, and she was pregnant, but she had a miscarriage, so she had to spend, you know, took some time off work to recover and everything. And she came back, and and one of the females realized that she was gone, and somehow, you know, made it known that she knew that she had been gone and wanted to know where she was. And she explained it to her, and the animal embraced her and comforted her. She understood what happened. I mean, it's just tears at your heart. I mean, she's a mother. It's just, I know they're not people, and I know they don't have human souls, but man, they got something. And I wouldn't have
gone there. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Luckily, it's not a problem to worry
about. I don't
have
to figure it out, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it was Dorothy Sayers said that, you know, behind the appealing brown eyes and wagging tongue of a beagle is a mystery as inscrutable as the Trinity. And I've always thought that that's pretty true. We don't know why. Seems like God must have had something in mind.
Yeah.
When he created the rest of creation, but he hasn't told us. And that's really the thing is, you know, Revelation, the purpose of Revelation is just to help us repent and overcome the problem of sin and become divinized and glorified human beings who share in the new heaven and the new earth. But what else is going to be in the new heaven and the new earth? We're not told. It's just like, we'll get there, but right now let's just focus on the main thing. So anyway, looking down the list of questions, somebody wanted to know, how do you celebrate Easter Sunday? I go to Mass, I typically go to the vigil, because the vigil is really, you know, I go to Dominican parish, and the Dominicans really know how to do this stuff.
Oh, I bet.
They just go nuts. And so go to the vigil. Usually there's a party afterwards. Sometimes I'll stay for that, but a lot of times I'm just, you know, I'm 57
That's
years
late.
Old. I'm fart. Yeah, so I just go home and go to bed. But then the next morning, Jan tends to be the one wants to go on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
So Jan goes on Sunday morning, but I've been to the vigil. So a lot of times I'll get up. It's very typically it's a lovely spring day. And so I'll just go take a walk on a lovely Easter morning and go sit down by the lake and have a wonderful time. It's just, I have great associations with Easter. And then we have the big, you know, we'll have the family over and we'll have some kind of a big meal. Sometimes it's a turkey, sometimes it's a big ham or something like that. How about you guys? I bet you have fairly elaborate Easter things that you do.
Oh, you'd think so. We used to go to the Easter Vigil. I love the Easter Vigil. Any vigil, that's my very favorite vigil mass to go to. But since we do the Passover Seder on Saturday, which we discussed in a previous show,
right.
We're usually pretty wiped out by the time midnight comes around or 10 o'clock comes around or whenever the Easter Vigil starts. So we've been going on Sunday morning. And what else do we do? I guess we dye Easter eggs on Sundays and we eat leftover Passover food and we eat candy.
Okay.
And that is our tradition because it's like
Well, I'm pleased to report that a couple of our listeners are very clearly taking my side and accusing you. So that's good. Well, at least one of them is. So somebody just wrote in a text saying, Simca won't eat chocolate pie, but will eat garbage pie. I think you really do have to explain that. And somebody else also wants to know if you're familiar with Henry and Mudge. It's a book series about... Oh, same person.
Yes.
Yes, a book series about a mastiff.
A giant slobbery mastiff. Yes, we love those books. And there's a million of them. Cynthia Ryland. They're easy reader books, but the stories are really worth reading. They're not stupid little stories. They're nice little stories.
Okay.
And it's about this boy and his stupid, horrible, well, not horrible. I might be editorializing a little bit. His slobbery mastiff who just follows him around and likes to smell him, and they go on adventures together.
Okay.
And it's we love Henry and Mudge. What was the first one? Oh, garbage pie. Yes,
I have gone on the record doing garbage pie. So, a confused and shocked audience is that they're trying to take it in, but it's just not their world is in turmoil, and only
yeah,
you
my
can.
Record,
you can
my record
to write that
speaks wrong. For itself. I think my record speaks for itself.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll. Just let that.
I don't know what that means.
pay no attention to this baffling non-explanation. Okay.
I should run for president.
You'd be
if
great.
If I hadn't giggled like that, I totally could have. I don't know. No, boy, people are really excited. Oh, I know what I wanted to say. When I was in college, I studied ancient Greek, and people are not aware that the letter P-I, which is 3.1415, etc., is pronounced P. It's not pronounced pi, it's pronounced P. So it's P
okay.
day, ha.
Now you have just upset everybody on planet Earth.
P day, it's P day.
It's time to draw a discreet veil over this entire conversation by ending the show. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We've been here today with Simca Fisher. Our producer was Ethan Bolin, and we will be back tomorrow with Tom McDonald. Till then, bye.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.